Hello and welcome to episode 329 of Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always, Mr. James Jones. And Guillaume Veillette.
We really are doing this every week, huh?
The show? Yes, we're doing the show every week. Get used to it. And Mr. John Lindemann is here.
I am not playing SimCity, and ladies, my servers are always up.
Say, you and every other person on Earth are not playing SimCity right now.
No one's playing SimCity. We have a fun show lined up for you today. We've got some really good emails coming up after this, and I think we're going to have some leftovers to hold in reserve for next time. Wanted to let people know up front, just in case it takes you a couple days to listen to the whole show, that we are planning to start Retroactive next week. By talking about Ease Book 1, which is basically the first 5 or 6 hours of Book 1 and 2, which you probably got as a package on Virtual Console or Steam.
Right.
And, or DS or, you know, or PSP.
Whatever.
There are lots of platforms to play it on. Anyway, Book 1 is much shorter than Book 2, and I thought that might be kind of a good chunk to bite off for the first part. The week after that, we're going to have our PAX East panel. So there won't be a normal episode, but you should hear a recording of the panel on pretty much on normal schedule, hopefully. And then the week after that, we're going to come back from PAX East and do the rest of Ease Book 1 and 2. So however far we can get in that amount of time, we'll talk more about the game and have more comments. So the reason I bring it up is just if you're playing the game and you haven't started sort of depositing some of your thoughts about it in the forum thread, please do so, because at least the early part of the game, we will be talking about it very shortly, and we'll be recording that not very many days after this episode comes out. So please do that before you forget. And if you haven't started playing yet, it's certainly not too late, especially since we're breaking it up into two parts. And I would encourage you to check it out. It's a fun game. And there's been some good discussion so far. So I'm hoping for even more. And we'll be pulling some quotes out of that for the show. So that's the old business out of the way. And now we're ready for new business. James is up first with a game that is on a Nintendo platform.
Not that I'm playing it on one.
But
it is technically on a Nintendo platform. Yes. So I finally whipped around and bought last year's disappointment of the century of the week, Mass Effect 3. I got that about a week ago yesterday, and
finished it with all the endings?
I finished it with an ending, such as that ending is, and I don't have a ton to say about it because it's a year old game, and most people by now have either played it if they care, or just don't care, which, by the way, EA makes this a great call to publish on Wii U at $60. Nice work.
Yeah.
It's about 20-something hours long. I did pretty much every single thing you can do to boost your preparedness for the end game. Because really, this game feels much more like just a bunch of quests that you can do in sort of an open world format. And there's sort of a thread of these important quests that link you to the end game, but it's not always super clear which ones are the main plot. It's just sort of, there's a collection of things you can do. And there's also some lower tier stuff of like scanning planets for artifacts that you can take to people to get more quote war readiness, which is a stat in the game that ultimately determines your ending.
Oh, okay.
So did you play any multiplayer?
So I played through the whole game and then went and got an ending, which, fun fact, if you get this game on the 360, you have to explicitly go download the enhanced endings they put out when everybody said their endings suck.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it doesn't, that big-ass patch it gets when you first download the game doesn't get any of that.
That's probably a multiplayer patch.
No, yeah. You have to download the multiplayer mode as well.
Oh, really?
It's not on disc. You have to download it.
Wait, what?
I had to download the multiplayer mode. You couldn't even do multiplayer until you downloaded this big huge file.
That's crazy.
It is kind of insane.
Yeah,
that's
weird.
You had to put in your EA passcode, and then it gave you now have credit to download the multiplayer mode. Like, what? So I download that. But So, just to quickly speak about the single player game, you actually can't get anything but a reasonably bad ending unless you play the multiplayer. Which is kind of weird to think about. But I guess that was their way to try to push people into the multiplayer mode where they can sell you stuff that is one-time use. Which, by the way, I hate the fact people can buy things on games that only get one use. And they're like a dollar a piece. It's like, it's like a dollar for a thing that only gets used one time. It's kind of absurd. And the effect is really short. It's like, okay, you're healed now. There goes your item.
It's like, so basically it's a premium game that you paid for.
Yes, it is. It is, yes. It's like the worst premium game that you've paid for. Now, the multiplayer mode itself, though, is actually somewhat of an interesting take on it. I was trying to think of what terms to put it in. And the thing I came up with, and this is going to be kind of weird to people, is the single-ish player mode of Monday Night Combat. So in that one, it's you and maybe a couple other people just fighting hordes of the robots that are more or less cannon fodder in the normal mode of Monday Night Combat, but just coming at you in waves that are much higher. In the normal multiplayer mode, it's really you versus the other team, but occasionally these robots happen. In this mode, it's just a wave of these robots. And that's really what the game is like. It's just waves of enemies, and you kind of have to work with the other people playing to sort of basically just survive and complete the objectives you're being granted. You know, it takes about 20-something minutes to get through a mode, and for your trouble, you earn level ups, you earn money that you can spend in-game, or you can bypass that and just spend cash. And you get what's called War Readiness Bonus, which goes back into the single-player mode to help you get better endings. It's sort of this weird thing going on where somehow your actions here affect that. But it's kind of a fun multiplayer mode. I don't know. It's really kind of punitive that to get the reward, you really have to complete all the waves. Like, that's 11 waves. And your whole party could fall on the 11th wave. You're still 25 minutes in. It's like, well, sucks to be you guys. You're like, oh, man, really? We didn't get much of anything, do we? It sucks. But I've gone through, I don't know, about 12 or so sessions. Some of them don't get anywhere near 23 minutes. Sometimes you're just playing with people who are just complete clusterfucks, and like they're all dead in about 2 minutes. And you're like, well, this sucks. You're trying to revive them, and you're just getting annihilated.
Man, you think about all the complaints of how few people are playing Call of Duty on Wii U.
Imagine the multiplayer of this.
Imagine what the servers are like for Mass Effect 3.
You'd be the only person. So I actually had a game, a multiplayer game in this, where I was playing with one other person. This game does not throttle the onslaught of enemies at fucking all. So it's you and one other guy just trying, like, you've basically find a corner to hide in and are just pouring gunfire out. And eventually you're just going to run out of ammo. That's over. You're done.
It sounds like a great RPG.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's this. I mean, at this point, the Mass Effect series is not an RPG. There are stat progression, but it's a third-person shooter. It really is.
Is it a good one, though?
It was always a hybrid.
Yeah, I mean, it moved that way after Mass Effect. The original Mass Effect was more of a run, you know, straight-ahead RPG. But after that, it's like, pretty much they focused on the fact that the part of the game that people liked the most was the fact that it had shooter elements. So they just kind of like went in that direction with the series overall.
My question is like, why would you play Mass Effect for the shooting when there's probably so many shooters that do it much better? Like, why not just play Gears of War instead, you know?
Easy, because Mass Effect has a good story and a cool world, and there's a lot more depth to it than there is Gears of War.
But the multiplayer, though, like, is there really a good story to the multiplayer?
No, I mean, I don't know. I never touched it. You know, I own this game. I've never played it multiplayer. So.
I always thought that was strange. The multiplayer, I was like, really? They had to add that? I mean,
that's EA for you.
Yeah, I just,
that's,
I mean,
just how they are.
I mean, they probably hooked it onto microtransactions or something, knowing them.
It's just like, I played Dragon Quest VI, and it's as if to get like a good ending, they force you to play the casino games. I would just shoot myself. I would, chuck the game out of a window. Something.
Yeah, I don't think it's actually true that you have to play multiplayer to get a good ending.
Well, that's what I read from other people as well. Like, the readiness stat doesn't actually go high enough unless you play multiplayer. Or unless
you can't max it out, but I don't think you need to. I think there's a line on the war readiness. If you cross that line, you're going to get one of the, and I mean, there's basically three endings. They're FMV basically. Mm-hmm. And, if you cross that line, you're going to get one of those three and you can max the bar out, but I don't think that actually makes any difference. Cause I never played multiplayer and I got one of the ending. I mean, if you go on YouTube and look up Mass Effect 3 endings, I got one of those. Mm-hmm. And I never played multiplayer. So I think that's overblown. You can get up to that line a lot faster if you're also playing multiplayer. But if you do like James and I did, and you basically just do all the side missions, you'll fill it up easily. I mean, you know, close enough that it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they try to hook people in to get to play it, you know, because I'm sure that their concern was people aren't coming to this to play that kind of game. They're coming to this to play a long RPG. And so we got to hook them in there somehow. Get them to play the multiplayer.
Because then they spend money on consumable power-ups.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. If I would like to think it in my heart that they didn't do that with that series. That they didn't have, like, you know, that they didn't micro-transaction it. But it wouldn't surprise me.
So, James, we talked about multiplayer and everything. But since you finished Mass Effect 3 and you've now finished the whole trilogy, what are your kind of final thoughts on the overall experience?
So when 3 came out, a lot of the criticism was leveled against the fact people felt like it didn't really seem to reflect on the things they did over the course of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there were complaints about really specific injunctions in the game where, spoil the first game. You can decide whether or not to save this giant queen of the bugs that had apparently 1,000 years ago been responsible for nearly wiping out all life in the galaxy. Well, that never really comes back into play throughout, like, the entire arc of the game. There's this one specific mission in the third game where it comes up, and people talk about it a bit, but besides that, there's really no payoff for what had been billed the whole, you know, it was going on. It's a huge, monumentous decision. Similarly, there's one at the end of the second game, which, since it's more recent, I won't spoil. But basically, you're given the choice of destroying or keeping the enemy technology. And again, it doesn't really seem to have any meaningful impact on the end state of the game. There's like a marginal impact on it, but really it's not much of anything. So I can see why people felt like, what's the point? To me, some of it was fine, and to a certain extent, if you look at the games individually, they're good games. But yeah, I think the concept of this trilogy where the whole world is contextualized based around what you did, it doesn't execute on that the way it probably bills itself as doing.
It's almost as if that were a really, 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 really hard thing to do.
Oh,
and
no.
the developer suddenly realized that.
This is really hard, guys.
Yeah.
No, I get that. I mean, if you think about it, there's, you know, you make, I don't know, 100 decisions over the course of each one of these games. Some of them are really minor, but some of them are pretty huge. And that essentially leads to an infinite number of story arcs you could conceivably end up with. And that's fine. They have to program for all those things. I get that. But it seems like some of the big ones, like especially the ones I mentioned, don't really seem to be that focused on, which is pretty inexcusable because not only are they mandatory, you have to make a decision there. There's only two. I mean, really, you can only make one of two decisions. And they're probably some of the most memorable decisions in the course of the game. And in fact, in the third game, you make a very similar decision to those two. And it doesn't really affect much throughout the outcome of the game. I mean, some people talk to you differently afterwards, but it doesn't even really seem to affect the end state. So I think they had better intentions than they originally, or what they ended up with. I think they intended to do more. And ultimately, I think, like Guillaume said, they found, wow, this is actually really hard. And ultimately backed off a bit. So they're fine games. I think some of the criticism leveled against them was unfair. The original ending, which is the one I saw, which means I don't have to trudge back through the last 2.5 hours to get the new one. The original ending sucks. It does. It sucks. It's bad, terrible, awful ending. basically, the end state is, if it's a goodish end, a few members of your crew that survived get off the ship. Not all of the ones that survived, just a handful of them. So you don't know who made it or who didn't. That's the ending. They get off. The end. Boom. Credits. That's not
ending. They get off?
No. They get off and they literally step off the ship and look at some trees. That's the end.
But do they step off?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what they do. Like, that doesn't constitute an ending. That's just an establishing shot for what would be an ending. So yeah, I get that. That they really seem to just shit can the ending there.
But I think the ending is the last 2.5 hours.
It is.
That's the problem. People focus on, you know, people are really obsessed with the movie. You know, I do all this stuff and I fought this boss and then I go through this long
what
sort of semi-interactive Metal Gear Solid cutscene and then I talk to this guy and do some dialogue trees and then I see some crazy shit and then I have to make one last really confusing major decision and then I see this little 30-second movie and people think the 30-second movie is the ending. No, all that stuff you just did is the ending. I mean, in a sense, the whole game is the ending.
But that's true. But that last 30-second, that last decision you make before that 30-second video
is dumb.
It's dumb. It's really dumb, and it's really confusing. Yeah. And that 30-second video doesn't really tell you what the net effect of your decision was.
No, I think they're trying to leave some of it up to your imagination.
I think it's a metaphor for life.
Yeah, I mean, but considering they've not left anything else up to your imagination, and that's the payoff for the third game.
Yeah.
It shouldn't. It should just say, this is what the fuck happened. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And
it's a bit of a mess.
Instead, they did the DLC where you can invite people up to your room at the Citadel to have parties. That is a real fucking thing. And in it, you get to watch one of the characters. I won't say which one to spoil it, but one of the female characters comes up and engages, quote, sing-along mode with her favorite romantic comedy. I'm dead serious. Just Google Mass Effect sing-along mode. It's fucked. Ooh. It is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Oh, you get an achievement for it, because why not? Mass Effect 3! Woohoo!
Okay, yeah. Well, moving on, the next new business comes from Guillaume.
Yeah, so last week I completed Dragon Quest VI, a game I had in my backlog for years and years, and felt pretty good to get rid of that. But at the same time, I kind of felt like James described. I kind of didn't really want to play anything else. I almost kept playing, but then I thought maybe I should just, you know, follow that up with another game in my backlog that I've had for a long time. And last week, for some reason, we mentioned the GTA Chinatown Wars, and that just, you know, reminded me, oh yeah, I really like, you know, the maybe like 5-10 hours that I played, and I should probably get back to that and finish it. I had every intention to, but only now do I have time, I guess, despite the busy release schedule that Nintendo has had for this trimester.
But it's swarmed. Trimester. I mean, all day, every day.
So yeah, Chinatown Wars. It's
so first question before you really delve into it. Mm-hmm. I'm basing it off my memory. How does that game look?
What do you mean? It looks like a DS game. Actually, I was going to make the remark that it's like the third or fourth game that I play, DS game that I play on my 3DS XL, and they all looked really good. So I don't know if I got used to that kind of, you know, the fact that they're all the wrong resolution, basically. But I find myself that I don't mind anymore. Like, I feel like I could get rid of my DS XL and not really miss it at this point.
You would miss the gravitational pull it has on your life. I actually meant the game itself. I'm just... For whatever reason, it's sticking in the back of my mind that I was really unimpressed with how that game looked.
Well, it has kind of that sort of artifact-y sort of look.
Yeah.
To its 3D-ness, sort of like Pokemon Black and White version 2 and version 1, you know? Still looks pretty good.
Yeah, I remember playing a demo of the PC 2D games back in the day, like before GTA 3. I remember playing a demo for some reason a lot, and it kind of looks like that. Like, it was low resolution, it was 3D, but, you know, from an overhead view, so it was... Yeah, like, I don't know, there's some cell shading, I guess, going on, or at least, like, the characters have these this black outline around them, the cars have these black outlines.
Yeah.
I don't know, I don't think it looks bad, I think you get used to the look pretty quickly. But yeah, like, I'm fine with the way it looks, and it's really well-designed, really smart game. Like I really like the way that it could be a pain in the ass to control a car from this view. Like you could end up oversteering all the time, using the D-pad, but the game kind of corrects your course automatically. So it's very, very easy to take curves, at intersections. The auto aiming is really helpful. Otherwise it would be kind of annoying to have to aim again with a D-pad. And the game is really funny, and I, you know, that's common of a lot of GTA games. I mean, they all have this sarcastic or, you know, satire kind of thing going on. But the fact that you don't have voice acting, I think, actually helps. Not that the voice act... I've only really played GTA 4 on consoles.
Oh, no.
And the voice acting was fine. Like, the quality of the voice acting was fine, but I remember being annoyed by the editing of the cutscenes for some reason. Like, you always, every cutscene opened with your guy just walking in someplace.
Yeah,
all of them.
It was like a really old, like, 40s movie when they were still trying to figure out how to establish scenes.
Yeah, and like, characters take turns speaking, you know.
Hey, Nico! And then they just talk.
Like, yeah. Yeah, basically.
I think games like Uncharted 2 make GTA 4's cutscenes look really bad in hindsight.
Yep.
Right. But, you know, Chinatown Wars doesn't have this problem because it's all basically, you know, comic book panels. I mean, like, you see still scenes and you read the text and it's well written as usual, but it's, you know, like, you don't have that problem of, like, the pacing being off. And, also they're over much quicker than the cutscenes in GTA 4. If you want them to be, you just, you know, press the button as soon as you're done reading the dialogue and there you go, you're off playing again. And that's really, that goes for the whole game. Like, the missions can be done very quickly. The fact that the city is much smaller than other GTA games, I think actually helps the pacing again, because you're never, like, even when your mission or the place you want to go is all the way across the city, it takes you no more than like 3 minutes to get there. And I find that fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of people right now just being like, I don't know, like I've been reading a lot of editorials from, gaming journalists being like, well, you know what? The PS4, I'm not so sure it's going to make games better and stuff like that. And you've got commenters saying like, Oh, you Luddites, like, of course it's going to make games better. Can you imagine what developers will be able to do without the limits of the PS3? And I want to see more developers have more limits. I want someone to, you know, to put a stop to the ever-increasing size of cities and the GTA games, because, like, this is so much better. Give them limits. That way they can concentrate on making what they have, what they can put in the game, good. You know?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you can still have large game areas, but just make it convenient. I mean, I couldn't believe convenient to get around. I mean, I couldn't believe in GTA 4. I was like, wow, you still make me drive all the way across the city to finish this mission. And then if I die during the mission, you make me start all the way back at the other side of the city.
Yeah.
So I have to drive all the way across. I'm like, fuck you, GTA 4. You're stuck way back in the PS2 days, and that's the kind of stuff where that adds no value to the game. They just do it because that's the way they've always done it, and that's just dumb.
Well, John, if you're going from the Bronx to Long Island, obviously the only way to do that is to drive. There's no mechanism for rapid transport.
True, if I'm doing it in real life.
Yeah, in real life. And obviously, if you die in Long Island, you're going to go back to the Bronx.
Obviously.
it's hell, or what?
No, but that's convenient.
Exactly.
It does work out okay.
Honestly, yeah. I think one of the things that that plagues GTA is that, to me, there's an unnecessary stress when you're playing, when you're really trying to play the mission. I mean, it's one thing when you go out there and your goal is to just create as much chaos as possible, and they make it easy to do that, and that can be a real fun challenge, even to see, you know, can I actually fill up my alert meter or whatever, the wanted stars or whatever, and then can I actually get away and clean up before I die. I mean, I think that's a huge part of what people play it for. But when you actually are trying to finish a mission, I feel like the game should put in some controls or some assist to help you avoid accidentally breaking the law or accidentally dying.
Yeah.
Because,
because it just gets
at
annoying.
At that point, that's not really what the game's about anymore. You're not trying to create chaos when you drive. You're trying to just kind of stay in the lines and just make it from one place to the other without everything going totally crazy. And I feel like there's an undue amount of tension there when even mundane tasks like walking through the park become terrifying because the physics and the AI in the game are so crazy and supercharged that you can, you know, step on the grass and all of a sudden like snipers and are coming down from helicopters to hunt you down. And it's like when you've been
the
playing this mission,
says keep off the grass, goddammit.
Yeah. When you've been playing this mission for 30 minutes and, you know, you make some very trivial mistake and all of a sudden everything just goes to hell. It's so frustrating. The Chinatown Wars really avoids that, which is one reason I like it.
My best experience with that game was I was halfway through a mission in a park, and a car just comes careening off the road through the park and hits me.
Yep.
Why? I don't know. I'm nowhere near the road. He was driving on the grass for a long-ass time.
If yeah. only you could explain to the cops that you didn't mean to punch that lady. It was the physics.
Yeah.
That's right. I hit the wrong button.
Would have helped me so many times.
This button is contact-sensitive. I can't help it.
But yeah, to be fair to GTA 4, I think you can take a cab, but, you know, like, that's a weird fix. I don't know.
Why don't you just get in your car and say, I want to go here, and then you go.
Yeah, you don't really feel like a badass taking a cab.
Right.
No.
Nico, let's get in the back of the cab so we can go shoot
I'm living it at my power fantasy through this game, hopping a cab.
To me, though, what makes for Chinatown Wars more enjoyable is really, we talked about it on the show a couple years ago, it's that GTA 4 is fucking depressing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a depressing game.
Yes.
I mean, you're basically a fucking war criminal. You are literally a war. You were literally in the massacre of Serbs.
Yep.
Not Serbs, of Croats,
Georgia,
and Bosnians. You were involved in that.
Oh, yeah. That's the one.
Yeah. Yep. It's like, why is this character someone we want to be involved with? He's a terrible person.
Yep.
Yeah. And everyone else is just a cartoon character.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
he doesn't fit in at all. Like there's a clash.
He's so much more grimdark because of it. He's like, he's the grim, darkest character since Ezio.
Whereas like the character in Chinatown Wars, Huang is just a smartass through and through.
Yeah.
Like
he's just
all the time.
Asshole.
He always says something like, "Oh, you're I really like that patriarchal dickhead thing you've got going on," and you know everyone is telling him to go fuck himself. It's I don't know. It's very entertaining.
It's
he's
funny.
Jerks
yeah.
to people who deserve it.
Yeah,
and he's funny. And,
he is
absolutely
that was
funny.
My biggest problem with GTA 4 is I felt like the game wasn't really funny anymore, and that's one of the things I like so much about the predecessors. You know,
yeah.
The game just took itself way too seriously, and Chinatown Wars is so refreshing because I mean it is very rated M, which on a DS game is just weird, you know. I mean, it's just a bizarre experience to play it because there's not anything else quite like it. But the game is so irreverent and so funny and so crass.
Although you did not play Golden Sun DS, did you?
No, I did not.
You'd be surprised. So to close off on Chinatown Wars, like perhaps the game would not really be what people who actually play those games to wreck shit up would like. You know, like it's a little bit harder to do in this game, but I'm playing it for the missions, and I like the missions are actually fun. And if you still haven't played this game, I definitely check it out. It's worth going back to. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, it's. I think if Nintendo ever gets around to releasing DS games on the 3DS eShop, which I feel like needs to happen pretty soon, I feel like that is very doable and is a good idea. To me, this is like one of the ultimate games that should be on there because so many people missed it the first time around. I mean, the sales were really bad and it's such a wonderful game. You put it up there, you know, make it cheap. Like, I mean, there's an iPhone version that is very cheap and also, I'm sure, not very good, you know, based on the way it would have to control. So do you put that game back out on the eShop and make it $5 or something like that? I think this would actually have kind of a whole second life. A lot of people playing it for the first time and talking about it, telling their friends.
Yeah, and somehow, just like Animal Crossing, it's a game that would gain from being always there on your 3DS. Because
absolutely.
You know, you just, you know, turn it on and run some drugs and close it off and
sell
it's fun.
Some smack.
Good, wholesome fun.
pop out and go back to Zen Pinball.
Yep.
So I'll go next, and I'll apologize for this not being really Nintendo related, but I think it will be of some interest to people. I bought a Vita this week.
Huh.
And part of me...
Sell out.
Yeah, part of me isn't totally sure why I did this. And then part of me is like, oh, it was an easy decision. I've really wanted one since it came out. I've just always felt that it was really overpriced and that there weren't enough games to justify that price. So a couple things happened. First off, you know, PlayStation Plus went totally crazy on Vita. And that's when I signed up for Plus, kind of in anticipation of one day I will get a Vita, and when I do, I will suddenly have a ridiculous number of games to play on it. And I do now. I have about 20 games on the Vita. I may never actually buy a Vita game. I mean, I don't know that I need to at this point. I have so many things to do on it.
Do you think that the whole PSN Plus initiative has backfired?
It's totally backfired, yeah, because Sony's never going to make any money off. I mean, you know, they make $5 a month or whatever I pay for PlayStation Plus, but it's not very much. Mm-hmm. They're never going to make very much money off me on software sales. And unfortunately for them, because they are stupid, they also didn't make any money.
Yes.
They also didn't make any money off the hardware sale because I bought my system used. And that's because they are apparently, as of today, there's no indication that they're going to drop the price in the West. They just did in Japan.
They said they're not going to 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the PlayStation 4 unveiling where they talked a lot about Vita and all the ways it was going to interact and all that stuff.
We call that segment the Please Buy a Vita segment.
That would have been the perfect time to announce a price drop, and they didn't do it. So that kind of tells me that they have no immediate plans. And the thing is, even when they do, and if they drop the price on it next week, I'd still be fine with it because I pay $200 for my Vita. And if they drop the price, they're probably going to drop it to $200. So I wouldn't have saved any money
anyway. Well, now
you already
did buy one of the sticks, like the 32 gig stick, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. I already had a memory card because I bought it on a ridiculous sale back in January, I think it was, from the Sony store online shop, because they had a 32 gig memory card for $60, which is still, don't get me wrong, still overpriced.
But it's about
half of the retail value.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and bought that again, anticipating at some point I will own a Vita. And when I do, I will be glad that I had this thing and got a really good deal on it.
Yep.
To me, that we talk about it being overpriced, that memory card is the killer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, that's what they do. They make their margin on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably like the argument that they gave to retailers. Like, you know, we might sell our games digitally, but you are going to make a huge margin on our memory cards.
Oh, that's totally the argument they gave to retailers. Yes, that is exactly true.
Yep.
And the real situation is, at some point, you need to say either fuck my customers or fuck retailers. You can't pick both. and right now, saying fuck my customers is not going to sell hardware. And if you don't sell hardware, you're not going to sell memory cards.
Yeah.
So at some point, Sony needs to go, all right, we fucked up. Memory cards are now in the box.
In a three-stage process over the course of 6 months, I am now a Sony Vita owner. And I paid what I think is a very reasonable price for it. In fact, I think I ended up getting a pretty good deal. You know, I mean, ultimately about $250, $260 for the whole shebang, including as many games as I could possibly want for it. So I spent the first two nights of ownership downloading things because Sony's, I don't know if you guys know this, the PSN store is kind of slow.
I've heard some things.
Has a lot in common with Nintendo's eShop on the Wii U. But yeah, it's pretty slow, and I was downloading.
The eShop is way faster.
I've heard the PSN is even slower than the Wii U eShop, which is terrifying.
Mm. But I downloaded 20, 30 gigs worth of stuff, so, you know, I pretty mostly filled my little memory card, but that's fine. So I've got, like, I don't know, 8 or 10 PS1 games. Some of them I had paid for back on PS3 and either played some or never played at all. I've got, I don't know, 5 or 6 PSP games, which is great. That was one of the main reasons I wanted a Vita, because I never had a PSP. So for me, it's like getting two systems in one. And there's plenty of PSP games I'm curious about. And even if you have PS Plus, they, you know, some of the free games that you get are PSP games, and they were things like, you know, Patapon and Final Fantasy Tactics that I would have paid for anyway, probably. So, that's really good news for me. And then I've also got 6 or 7 Vita games. So I haven't played much of anything, you know, enough to really talk about it yet. I've been dabbling in 2 or 3 different things, but I haven't really focused in on any one game yet. Maybe by next week I will have, but, I kind of want to talk about the system and the interface. I guess first off, the system is really nice, is a nice piece of hardware. It feels like, you know, it's feels very well made. The controls are pretty good. Maybe the controls might be the weak link just in terms of the quality of the buttons and the joysticks, but they're still pretty good, I would say. And the joysticks are real joysticks. So it's a huge, you know, improvement over the PSP. I haven't used them a lot yet, but so far, I would say the Vita joysticks are, you know, a different form factor, but probably about the same quality as the circle pad. That's kind of how I feel about it. I've never been a massive fan of the circle pad because it's not really a joystick. You know, it's just this kind of in between mushy thing that I'm not a huge fan of it. These things don't have a lot of throw, which means they end up being really sensitive, you know, because they don't move very far before you hit the edge.
The PSP nub was the same way.
Yeah, but they stick out and they feel more like a real joystick, and and I think that's fine. The screen is gorgeous, as you know. I mean, it's also fucking huge. Like, it's almost as big as the Wii U gamepad screen, and it's certainly far higher quality. Much, much, much better looking screen. Very bright. Huge viewing angle on it. You can look at the system almost sideways and still see what's going on, which is nice if you've got it propped up for Netflix or something like that. The touchscreen works really, really well, but you know, the problem, it kind of has the same problem as like an iPad or something, which is that the screen that you're looking at things on is also the one that is covered with your fingerprints and the smudges, you know.
Or by your covered by your finger.
Yeah.
That's not been a problem so far, just because I'm not playing, you know, really fast action games with my finger. It's more I'm using it for menus and stuff like that. But it works really well. Actually, in Uncharted, you know, when they first showed the Uncharted game for Vita, I thought it was kind of silly that you could tap on ledges to move Nathan Drake around on ledges. And that does sound silly, but the nice thing about it is you can actually draw a path with your finger. So if you're looking at the side of a cliff or the side of a building and there's all these different, you know, ledges for you to move around on up and to the side and then back down again or whatever, you can actually just use your finger and draw a path and he'll just go through the animations all in a sequence, which I think is very convenient. I mean, that stuff can be a little bit tedious, when you're doing it all with the joystick and the buttons. Honestly, playing that part of the game is more about finding the path than it is actually using the buttons. And, you know, there's no timing to it or anything like that. So I think it works really well. And, the touchscreen's been really nice. The back touch, I haven't really used yet. Nothing that I've done so far has really involved it very much. So I can't comment on that. But, you know, it has good gyroscope stuff and, the speakers are nice on it and, I'm just really, really happy with the hardware so far. The wireless connection seems a little bit dodgy. It seems to lose my network a little bit, which, you know, you go back to that PS4 presentation, you hear them say that, you know, basically you're going to be able to play any PS4 game on your Vita locally. I don't know about that. I mean, just based on I don't know if it's the antenna quality or maybe it's their protocols. Maybe it's something they can fix with a firmware update, but I'm not super impressed with the robustness of the wireless connection on this thing so far. But you know, whatever. We'll see if they try to address that. The UI, I wanted to remark on that because I remember when it came out, people were kind of complaining about the way it looks or they didn't think it was very intuitive. And I have to say, so far, I feel like the user interface is really, really good on the Vita.
Now, they did update it. They did issue a big update to their GUI. Okay. So you might be seeing probably the newer one. I'm sure you had to apply a big update right out of the box, right?
Of course. But it took 5 minutes. It was shockingly fast.
Well,
but, yeah.
It might have already been updated, though, because it was a used one.
Yeah, that's right. It was a used one. Yep.
Possibly, yeah.
But I remember a lot of complaints were that sometimes you could use the buttons and sometimes you had to use touch. And, like, there was this inconsistency that annoyed people because you had to switch back and forth.
The 3DS has that, too.
Yeah, there are.
So far, I've mostly been using touch, but there is an option in the settings where you can do the whole home menu, all the icons, you know, choosing among your games. You can do all that with joystick and buttons if you want to. You can turn that on or off. But it's nice. You can, you know, move things around really easily. It works kind of like an iPhone, you know, moving icons around, and you can add extra screens so that you can store more things and be a little more organized with it. And I mean, I was downloading a lot of shit. So I have a lot of things to deal with on this menu, and I've found it very easy to use, and it's really nice. You know, you go to the, you push the home button or the PS button, whatever it is in the corner, and you can suspend any game, and then you can decide whether to close it, or you can go do other stuff and then come back to it. So, I mean, it's functionality that you've seen on other systems, including DS and 3DS, but it works really, really well. You, everything downloads in the background by default, which is very nice. Mm. And you can queue up multiple things to download and install. Which has been a lifesaver for me, because otherwise it would have taken even longer to get all this stuff installed. So, yeah, I mean, that's all I can say about it so far, but I'm very happy with it, very excited to catch up with all these games that I've heard about for so long. And, you know, I'm just kind of thrilled. And unlike most people, I didn't buy this system for the future potential. I bought it for what I know already exists on it. So I'm not really expecting a whole lot out of E3 or any time after that. You know, if the Vita's a dead system, that's okay with me, because there's a lot of content on there that I want to play, and I got it for, you know, a price that I'm very comfortable with. Okay, so next up is John Lindemann.
All right, speaking of PS Plus and games that you download for free.
Games actually that you stole from Sony.
Yeah, a game that came out a while back and, you know, I wanted to pick up at the time, but it just didn't really make the cut, was Vanquish. It was interesting because I really didn't know a heck of a lot about it. I knew it was, you know, an action game of some sort, directed by...
It's by Platinum.
Directed by Shinji Mikami. Mm-hmm. You know, Resident Evil fame.
Of Shinji Mikami fame.
Now, yes. Wait, I have an important question, John. Did you ever play PN03?
No. I never played PN03.
Oh, that's too bad. It's a really strange...
It is a very weird game.
It definitely kind of reminds me of what I know of that game, especially in terms of look and feel.
Yes. Except for the fact that the look is not of the voluptuous rear end of a cybernetic woman.
It's the voluptuous rear end of a dude in armor.
I wish he moved his ass the way she does. Oh, baby.
Guillaume. That game. That's the French for you.
No, but I mean, it's a really cool GameCube game, PN03, and Vanquish is absolutely the spiritual successor to that, and especially in look and feel.
There's definitely elements there.
I don't know, like PN03 was all about dodging, and this is more of a cover shooter, right?
Not really. Well, no, I mean, that's the thing. I haven't played too deep into it. I've played to the first, like, big boss that you fight.
The one with the glowy bits?
He's kind of like he starts off as like this big mechanical spider, and he eventually transforms into about 15 different things.
And you shoot the lights.
Well, that's a lot of what the game is, right? I didn't realize that it would be kind of like such a target shooter kind of thing. Tyler Olu, when this actually we were talking about this in email with everybody on the site, and Tyler. He made an interesting comment talking about this game. He's like, oh, you have to, you know, it's up on PS Plus. It's free. You got to download it. It's amazing. I still play it all the time. And I try to get the high score on, you know, on all the boards. And I'm like, wait a minute. That sounds kind of weird. I thought it was just like your typical sort of run and gun kind of shooter that had probably like some terrible story. And it does have a terrible story.
But, oh, yes.
You know, I just thought it was your kind of typical sort of, you know, action game. I didn't realize that there was any sort of high score attack element to it. So I thought that was really interesting because you can, and I still really don't know how it works. That's one thing. I kind of went into it blind. So it's very easy to come into that game and not know what the heck you're doing because there's a lot going on. There's a lot of things that you can shoot at. There's stuff all over the screen. It's really fast paced. Fast paced. Yeah. So, and a lot of it is, you know, the one thing I didn't like, especially about the first boss fight was you can do this move where you slide along the ground and it goes, you kind of, go into this hyper mode and slide along the ground. And that's where sort of the cover shooting comes into play. You know, the boss is shooting at you. So you have to, you know, hide behind obstacles. You know, some obstacles can be destroyed, some can't. So it's kind of up to you to, you know, go back and forth between these obstacles that you can hide behind. You know, of course, while you're shooting these target areas on the boss. And so it's really cool. I thought that, you know, you can switch back and forth between guns. I didn't really find myself doing that very much. I don't know how much that comes into play later on in the game. But that was kind of one of those things I thought it was almost sort of overkill. Like, if they just would have given me, you know, one or two guns to switch between, I probably would have been happy. But it just seems like they threw that in there to kind of switch things up a little bit and probably make you make it seem like you have more choice than you really do, because I have a feeling that it's one of those games where probably you can use one gun for pretty much everything. But the story is pretty terrible. These Russians try to take over the planet by, I guess, there's a microwave satellite in space that shoots microwaves down, and they destroy San Fran with it. Melts a whole part of the city and kills a bunch of people and all that kind of stuff. But it's really, I mean, it's funny because it's like, it's bro-y, but like Japanese bro-y. So it's just pretty hysterical. The characters.
It's like Army of Two, but like Army of Two Deaths.
Yeah. I mean, awesome. And the characters look like they're ripped right out of, Gears of War. But with that Japanese kind of terrible, that Japanese twist where they just say hysterically terrible things. They actually are, Marines. They're Marines. So they actually are space Marines, big hulking space Marines.
Good.
So
I don't like my games that aren't space Marines.
Yeah. I mean, I was just waiting for the eat my bullets kind of thing, but I haven't seen it so far, but there's still a lot of the game to go. So I'm looking forward to that.
There's a lot of bullets to go.
Yeah.
I rented the game back when it came out, and now I have this game as well because of PSN Plus. I should finish it. But I remember being a little bit disappointed by the lack of melee combat. I mean, you can punch in a game, but you kind of go into this overdrive mode where, like, you just, like, pummel the guy, and it depletes basically all your energy, so you're left absolutely vulnerable. So, you know, like, it is a shooter through and through. Like, I thought it would be more of a kind of a melee game, but no.
Yeah, I mean, and most of the time, if it gets to that point, you're probably pretty much screwed anyways, because they're too close to you and they're just going to kill you.
Yeah.
So I didn't really find it too useful.
I should have waited for Revengeance, I guess.
That's probably the real successor to Vanquish.
Yeah.
I haven't played it yet, but I'm looking forward to playing Revengeance. It looks awesome.
Yeah.
So maybe the Wii U version. I think we have maybe a time for Guillaume to go again, and I know you have a second game to talk about, Guy.
Yeah, well, I've been playing two games on my 3DS because you can't street pass while you're playing a DS game. So, and that's very important, street passing, when you're taking the subway in Montreal. So when I'm, you know, going to and from work, I am playing Crashmo. Which I bought when it was on sale a couple of weeks ago. I would have, I was fine just waiting until I gave Pushmo more of a shot. Well, that's not really the right way to phrase this, because I played like 130 levels of Pushmo. But
that's
But I still wasn't quite done. You know, I wasn't at the bonus levels. These are still regular levels. So I was fine with, like, waiting before I got Crashmo, but the sale pushed me over the edge. And I had played a good portion of the beginning of Crashmo at the Montreal Nintendo event. Picking it up again, I really, like, it reminded me just how different the game plays. It's super weird to see these two games that look absolutely identical if you're just, you know, looking at the surface of it. Like, you're just pushing blocks around, and it's the same art, it's the same assets, and you wouldn't know that both of them play absolutely completely different. And this game needs a demo, because I've seen people, you know, trying to convince others, like, oh, well, you know, it's not exactly like Pushmo, and it's worth giving it a shot, even if you're Pushmo'd out. But I think that would speak more to, like, really big fans of Pushmo who want more of that game. And I think that there's a lot of people who perhaps, like, you know, liked Pushmo but weren't quite that into it, didn't complete it.
Yeah, what about people who wanted less?
No, but I mean, you know, like, they thought, well, this is a fun game, but I've had enough, and, you know, I'm not going back to that again.
Yeah, I just felt like it just took forever to get started.
Yeah. Well, anyway, like, Crashmo gets started significantly faster, And
if by getting started you mean it gets hard, then yes, yeah, Crash Mode gets hard way faster.
Yeah, like it does roll out new puzzle types, or I mean new devices or gimmicks very slowly. But it's not as if you're playing like 100 tutorial levels before moving on to the actual levels.
Hey, that's great.
Yeah, it just, you know, at the beginning, the Grandpa Pushmo or whatever his name is kind of annoying, and he does interrupt you a little bit too often. But the training wheels are off maybe like 15 puzzles in, which is 45 levels less than in Pushmo. So I don't know, I'm very pleased with it, and there's something about it that I just enjoy more than Pushmo. Like Pushmo seemed at a certain point the games, the puzzles didn't seem to really get more complex, they just got longer. And at a certain point, it became an exercise in remembering what steps not to do to not screw yourself over. You know, it felt like, you know, like the rules stay simple, but you have to see ahead very, very far. It's like, you know, playing checkers and having to see like 80 moves ahead to win. Whereas Crash Mo is almost, well, it's completely different. It's like baking a cake. you prepare the ingredients, you prepare the stuff, and then you put it in the oven and you watch the results. Yeah, that was a torturous metaphor, but
it's an interesting way to look at it.
That one hurt bad.
Well, like you've played both. Do you see what I'm getting at? Like you do, because you have to think about your moves a little bit more at the beginning, because you're basically setting up everything else that's going to follow. Like as soon as you move one block, you're affecting a whole bunch of other blocks. You have to already know the kind of like figure out the effect of what your move is going to do. And it's as if like you just like pull like here and here and here and everything falls into place. Whereas Pushmo, you were kind of solving the puzzle as you climbed up.
I agree with that, but I don't want to put people off of Crash Mo by making it sound like you have to do all this meticulous planning before you really start playing it, because of the rewind feature is still there. So you can experiment all you want. And the fact that things fall once you pull things out from under them and then you can't put them back up where they were physically makes you use the rewind a lot more. But I think that's okay. I think the puzzles in Crash Mo, although I do feel like the game is harder, and there's more going on with the physics, and so it's a little bit harder to keep track of the rules of the game. The rules are ultimately more intuitive, because in Crash Mo, the levels behave more like they would in the real world. And I think once you get used to that and you get over the comparison to Push Mo, where everything is very unrealistic and things kind of just hang out in space regardless of, you know, how much they weigh or how lopsided they are, etc., I think once you kind of get over the hump with Crash Mo, it starts to actually feel a little bit easier. And it feels more like the solutions are more natural, you know, like they're more rooted in the real world, just because things do behave more realistically in Crash Mo. So it makes it feel really difficult at first, but then as you get used to it, I think it evens out a lot.
Yep. So I'm not 130 levels into Crash Mo. I'm done with like 85 of them, but I feel like I've played just about as long. So yeah, like they took, there seems to be a jump in difficulty between the 2-star and the 3-star levels. Like the 2-star ones take me maybe like 5 minutes or less to solve. And then 3-stars, I have time to get to work before I finally figure it out. And then I miss my station. And anyway, but yeah, like the very, very fun. And how do I finish this? Crash Mo, buy it.
Okay. So I'm not going to really talk about these, but I did want to leave you with some very quick recommendations before we wrap the segment. On 3DS, try the Etrian Odyssey 4 demo.
Isn't it amazing?
It's an insanely long demo, and there's
3 hours.
It kind of feels like you're playing the real game. And then
you are. I mean, it really is like the start of the game.
Basically, yeah. And then you can save your progress, and if you end up buying the full game, you can move your save file over and not have to replay that stuff. So it totally justifies, you know, putting that much time into the demo. And it's a weird game. I think I really like it. I don't know that I'll ever get around to playing the full thing, but the demo is totally free, and man, there's a lot to it. It's really, really interesting. So check that out.
You can level up your characters up to level 10. After 3 hours, mine were about level 4 or 5. So potentially there's like, you know, 6 hours of gameplay just in the demo. And it feels satisfying. It teaches you the ropes. And actually, there's a reason why I'm getting rid of my backlog. It's so that I can feel better about buying a game that's probably going to take up like 100 hours of my life pretty soon.
All right. So a little preview there for you. And then on the Wii U, I know the joke or the running commentary is that there's nothing to play on the Wii U. And I just want to throw this out there. There are a lot of demos available at this point. It took a little while for those to start to trickle out. But you've got the Zombie U demo, which I haven't played yet. But there's also the Trine 2 demo, which is really good. And if you haven't tried Trine 2, especially if you haven't even seen it yet, do yourself a favor and download this. It takes 30 minutes to play through. It's a really nice demo, and it just looks amazing on TV. I played that game on Steam on my computer, so to see it on a much larger TV now, it looks even nicer. That is definitely worth checking out. You've got stuff like Sonic and Sega All-Star Racing. And of course there's the Monster Hunter demo as well, which I haven't played yet, but I'm afraid of
that demo.
Series
is known for its great demos. Known for it.
From what I've heard, the demo is not better than a Wii one. Like, it drops you against like a giant bunny.
Yeah. It's like, there's a giant monster, go kill it. And you're like, where is it? It's like, well, fuck you, figure it out.
How do I do it? Fuck you, figure it out.
How do I fight? Not important.
Oh, man. But yeah, there is stuff to try out. And, if you're broke or if you're just waiting for the next big thing on Wii U, I think the demos are worth checking out. And there's a fair number of them. I don't know that the eShop makes it very easy to find them, but they're out there. So do a little research and get yourself something to play on that system. So that's going to be all for new business this week. We're going to take a break and come back and hit you up with some listener mail.
In the face.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First is have a review of ATV Wild Ride 3D by Tyler Olin. Renegade Kid heard the roaring engines call for more 3DS kart racers and decided to upport a late DS ATV game. Thankfully, it's an okay ATV racer, hitting that spot that literally tens of people were excited at the prospect of 3D ATV games.
Next up, we've got a review for Retro City Rampage by Rory Cocker. I can't believe this game actually came out anywhere. After years of waiting, the Wii finally gets a GTA game. Well, not really, but the decade-long development cycle has finally brought this love letter to the industry to Wii, because Wii U isn't a thing. But you can play it on the Wii U.
You can, sort of.
Yeah. We also have a feature called Nintendo Collector's Journal. This is a regular feature by Justin Berube. Justin has an endless supply of Nintendo stuff. Included is a truly hideous hat with an NES controller on it. If you own this hat, please do not wear it in public. We're embarrassed for you.
I saw a girl at the mall with a Metroid hat.
Whoa.
Sucking at her brain.
The baby?
Probably, yeah.
The baby. You should just walk up to her. The baby.
Stealing her life force.
God. All right, we have a blog by one of my favorite Twitter people, Don Koopman. It's Call from EU, Most Wanted EU, and Gaming Pricing. We've made critiques of the pricing of Wii U ports, but in Europe things are even more dire. Need for Speed Most Wanted, 70 euros. Wow. As an American, way to go, EA. Stick it to those Euro jerks.
It's even better.
Because you're not even an American.
Exactly.
Boom.
Beautiful. Hey, I just read the script. Yeah, it's scripted. It's all scripted, people. It's all scripted.
You're honorary.
Don't let them behind the curtain.
And finally, Strategic Writing, an interview with Casey Lowe by Tyler Olu. Everyone want to know the story about how strategy guides get made? Tyler did. He grilled former GameFAQ magazine staffer, former Nintendo Power staffer, and former 8-4 staffer about documenting every stupid ammo drop in Resident Evil 2.
Fascinating.
That's what life's like. It's hard out there for a strategy guide writer.
It is.
Casey Lowe is pretty interesting. They're not really doing it anymore, but the Warning, a huge podcast, yep, talks about Japanese games more than the A4 podcast ever did.
Cool. All right, guys. So you can, as always, you can check out all of this fantastic original content, plus the latest news, videos, and podcasts over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back to the show, everyone. It's time for listener mail, and as always, the address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Before we get started, I want to say thanks to everybody who responded to the call when I put the note out on Facebook and Twitter that we were looking for more emails. We got so many that we're not even going to get to all of them this week, and we will keep those and use them next time. So James has the first email.
That's the point of the show. Everybody looks forward to me butchering your emails. Marcos writes, I was wondering how possible it would be to put Virtual Boy games on the 3DS Virtual Console. Would there be technical issues? Or would remakes be a better idea? Do people even care? I really would like to see those games on 3DS, because I have never played a Virtual Boy title. Marcos, let me go ahead and say, good for you. Keep it that way. Because I own a fucking Virtual Boy, and I own like 8 Virtual Boy games, and there's only one of them that's worth a damn.
There are a few that are pretty good.
No, of the 8 I own, there's only one of them that's worth a damn.
Oh, sure, yeah. But in the catalog, there are a few that are pretty good.
And which one is that, James? Is it Battle World?
It's Wario Land.
Yeah, Wario's really good.
Yeah,
But there's a couple other ones that
Telero are... Telero Boxer is kind of amusing, and then the Star Fox 64 precursor is kind of okay.
Yeah, Red Alarm, yeah.
Except you can't see what you're going because everything's outlines.
I'd love to try that. I've never played Red Alarm. But yeah, there's a pretty good Tetris, I think, and there's an arcade shooter. But, you know, Virtual Boy, look, there's not many games, period. There's... You know, not even all of those are very good.
Yeah.
But I would love for this to happen, just as for the sheer novelty. I think this would probably do really well for them. But the problem is, just technically, it's a lot of work. Like,
and it's a completely different type of 3D as well.
It is, but I do think it. I mean, I think it would work. I think it could be done effectively because you can go look at YouTube videos of Virtual Boy games. I mean, they're. You know, it is possible to translate them into 2D, and I think it would be possible to translate them into stereoscopic 3D.
Yeah, you can download an emulator for the Wii, actually.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. That is cool. A snake eating its own asshole.
That's cool.
I've played some of Wario Land on it, actually.
Dude, I might have to check that out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, basically, you know, Nintendo is so... detailed about emulation that they would do some pretty crazy stuff anyway, just like they already do to make sure the games ran properly. But in the case of Virtual Boy, because the hardware was so strange and then the display was unique, and that's a very kind word for it, but I think it would take quite a bit of programming work to rejigger all those games to work on the 3DS. I do think it's very possible. But, you know, they have to decide whether it's worth the effort or not.
Yeah,
but
I think it would be cool if they used it to promote something else. That would be kind of neat. Like a sort of...
Yeah.
Like the Virtual Boy 2.
Like a new Wario game.
Like a new Virtual Boy.
Virtual Boy.
It's just like there's one thing, though, that's impossible to emulate, and it's really the immersion that you get from not being able to see anything else in the game.
Yeah, there's a sensory deprivation that kicks in.
Yeah.
That is very true.
I also think that like the contour, like the foam thing around that absorbs your sweat is really vital to really appreciate.
The way that you can role play that you're a submarine commander is really awesome.
I am a submarine commander. I'll have you know.
Yeah, you're making fun of it, but actually the sensory deprivation is kind of a cool part of playing that
system.
No,
it is. It's a huge part of the system. I mean, but I'm allowed to make fun of it. I fucking bought one.
I understand.
I can say whatever I want about the thing.
So, yeah, it's a good question. Probably not ever going to happen, but
Boo. It
could. I would love for it to happen.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
keep your fingers crossed.
You could remake the games in such a way. Well, I'm thinking about it. So how the 3DS works is essentially there's two images being generated sort of offset from one another.
Mm-hmm.
And a parallax barrier is being used to trick your brain into pushing them together. It's a lot like your brain is – your eyes technically see two separate images and your brain sort of pieces them together to form multiple dimensions.
That's exactly what happens. It controls the angle, the field of view angle, so yep. that one eye sees one thing and the other sees another. And really, Virtual Boy was doing
the
same thing.
Doing the exact same thing.
But it was using two different displays that were separated by a physical barrier.
Right. It used your brain to do the dirty work.
Yeah.
Or more so than the 3DS did. So, in theory, you could probably find a sweet spot for some games where you project one image on top of the other in such an offset to get the same effect as the Virtual Boy. But because of it's a difference of the physical barrier versus just that parallax barrier,
yeah.
it's going to be a little bit more difficult to tune that in, and you wouldn't be able to use the slider. It's pretty much there, or it's not.
Yeah, 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 that's
so
true.
So you might be able to pull it off. It may not actually be that difficult, but it would be pretty finicky, I would imagine. And I imagine the sweet spot for most games would be really dead on. Because in the Virtual Boy, they controlled everything. They controlled the throw distance. They controlled your distance from your eyes to the screen. It was all very... You know, I mean,
it controlled the outside light.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very, very tightly wound situation where there's no possibility for outside interference in mm-hmm. any meaningful amount. Mm-hmm. So you could probably do it. It would be difficult. Now, what I wouldn't be surprised to see is if the 3DS ever gets cracked, which is still kind of, you know, hasn't really happened yet, somebody might try to experiment with it, you know, as a homebrew project, but.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be interested to see, just to see if it can be done.
Yeah, totally.
Were there any games that used everything about the funky controller that the Virtual Boy had?
No, like, nothing used that ridiculous-ass controller. That okay. controller is the worst controller ever designed.
Okay. Because if there were games that used both D-pads, you had one on the left and one on the right. Yeah, and, you know, you had an L and R and you had A and B and... You're missing a couple of buttons there on the 3DS if
yeah,
a
are.
Game were to use all of them.
I'm sure some ridiculous Japan-only game used all the buttons. Some truly insane shit came out on the Japanese Virtual Boy.
So not even Tetris 3D used them all? Like the?
Oh, God, no. There's probably some Japanese Macross Virtual Boy game that uses every single button. And you have to like finger dance across the top of it to accomplish whatever you're trying to do.
What's that Capcom Meg game again? The one with
Steel Battalion.
Steel Battalion
it's
for 3DS.
It's not
for Virtual Boy.
It would be like trying to play Steel Battalion Kinect with two different Kinects.
Even playing it with one is impossible.
Even playing with one is amazing.
So the next letter is Guillaume's going to read the next letter.
Leo writes. It pains me to tell you this, because I really enjoy your podcasts, and I must first say thanks for informing me of Gunman Clive, a great game, especially for only $2. But I hate to inform you that your breakdown of NBA 2K13 was wrong, wrong, wrong! I own it, and you got several things wrong!
Oh no.
First, I don't know all the difference, since I downloaded the full version. As for the heat vision presented by Gatorade, yes, it's dumb, but you can turn that off and do off-TV play instead. You mentioned that you can't and should be able to, but you can call plays with a gamepad. Much easier than play calling on the PS3. With a right stick that you can use to shoot or dribble, there is a difference if you push ZL to toggle between the two. Thanks again for your podcasts, except for your NBA 2K13 review. My only regret is that you only do one per week. Podcasts,
well,
not
so
NBA 3K. Ah, fuck.
NBA 2K13, which
yes.
is the dumbest name at this point. Drop it.
It is
just
hard to say.
Just drop it. It's getting out of hand. So, in my defense, in the demo, I can find no way to turn off the heat vision mode. That is what you are presented with.
And that may be a factor of the demo. I think you were clear about this, James, but you were talking about the demo, and the demo may not have all the features and all the options that the full game does. And you can only, if you've only played the demo, you can only talk about what you played, right?
Yep. And I said it may just be because it's the demo, and it was a demo, and the demo is hot garbage. Now, it may not mean the game is hot garbage, but that demo is hot garbage.
Right, and it's good news that the game, you know, addresses some of these things, and it's not actually messed up as you said. And, you know, maybe it's really fun. I don't know.
I mean, I would like there to be a good basketball. I mean, we haven't had a basketball game forever. Like, a real solid one on a Nintendo console. I really like the sport of basketball. I really enjoy it, but there's no good basketball games, at least not on Nintendo systems, and maybe, you know, Mario 3-on-3 Hoops doesn't count. So,
well, I was going to say, I mean, there's NBA Jam on Wii.
Yeah, but that's you know, that's not really...
That's barely basketball.
That's more... That's like calling Mortal Kombat a Kung Fu simulator.
Yeah, or calling Blades of Steel a hockey simulator.
Blades of Steel is the only hockey simulator.
Blades of Steel.
Well, then you won't be impressed by my other example, which was NBA Street, which was on GameCube.
Yeah, I mean, NBA 2K13, I mean, they're the best ones, supposedly. The NBA 2K series are supposedly the best ones in the market.
Yeah, so. They are. I mean, it would be cool if the game is good. I mean, that would be great, but that demo was terrible. And I'm just going to stick to that point. That demo is bad. That is a bad demo. And that's pretty inexcusable because it shouldn't be that hard to encapsulate a fucking basketball game in a demo. It's a basketball game. Give me the full game and just pare it down to two teams that I can't pick. I pick one or the other and one arena and be done.
Yeah. Hmm. Fair enough.
I got to say, we would have a lot of content if we would do an errata. Because we do get things wrong.
Of course we do.
All the time.
The show is to entertain, so I don't think it would be very entertaining to just list off like the things that we got wrong. Or
to be fair, though, when you guys get stuff wrong, I rub your fucking faces in it. And I find that to be highly entertaining.
I did catch some heat for daring to suggest that Double Dragon was not on the virtual console. When it was, I was thinking of Contra.
I agreed with you. I didn't think it was either.
Double Dragon is the only dragon.
Yeah, I mean, hey, we know a lot about Nintendo, but we don't know everything, and we make mistakes, and I'm not sure how much preparation people think that we do for this show, but it's not that much.
By the way, that was the first time I saw that letter. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I give you the opportunity, but you don't necessarily take it.
I have lots of opportunities in life. Understand that sometimes my priorities differ.
But my show notes, I'm not talking about the stuff I put on the website, which is very detailed because I can write it after the fact. But the show notes that I put together before we record is a text file with a list of games that we might talk about and a list of emails that we might have time to read out loud. And if we do a feature, it's like a few lines with just kind of topics that we might want to talk about. But 95% of what we do is improvised. And that means that, you know, we don't always get the facts right. And I wish we did, but that's reality. You know, we don't want to waste a whole lot of time looking things up when we're in the middle of a conversation.
Yes, Johnny, there is no way this show could be scripted. Question mark.
The sad part is Guillaume sounds kind of like this normally, so it's not really getting the point across.
The only part of the show that is scripted is the part that everyone knows is blatantly scripted, which is now
the part
playing.
That is the best part. Yes,
and scripted by James. Let's make sure everyone knows. Yes.
I do research during the show. I mean, if we're talking about something and you know we can't think of something, I might start. You know, using the powers of the internet to find what a point we're trying to make, but in terms of the forward thinking research, the show is really organic. How it moves from thing to thing, so it's hard to really do the research to get everything you need to know. I mean, I could have probably pulled a preview of NBA 2K13 for Wii U and looked up, hey, how does it use the fucking tablet? Because right now I'm tired of seeing the Gatorade Heat Vision. But
also, at the time when you were talking about that, you weren't talking about the full game. You were talking about your experience playing the demo. And
right.
your experience, I mean, what you said was accurate to the experience that you had. But I mean, it's still useful information to know, hey, the demo isn't very representative of the full game. Like, right. I appreciate people writing in and telling us that kind of thing. It's good to know.
Because that demo is, like I said, I mean, if you played that demo, I can't imagine going, yeah, I'm going to go buy this now.
Yeah.
So it's good to know that it's not that.
Well, thanks for writing, Leo. We're going to move on to the next email. And the next email is from Chris. And he says, I've been thinking a lot about Wind Waker HD re-release for Wii U, presumably coming in the later end of the year. Specifically, what Nintendo will do with the overabundance of control options. As someone who is a big fan of Skyward Sword's control scheme, I couldn't help but want to polish off the gold Wii Remote and wield the Master Sword again. What about you guys? Would you want to see stylus-based controls akin to the DS incarnations put in the game? Skyward Sword's motion controls? Or play it old school with the Pro Controller? Also, hopefully I'll run into you guys at PAX in a few weeks. I had a blast at last year's panel. Thanks, Chris.
I don't know about anybody else. I want to see a heat map. Definitely.
Sponsored by Powerade.
I really wish that we had the Wii Vitality Sensor to play Wind Waker with.
The game is controlled entirely by your pulse rate.
Yeah.
Link, run! Run!
The problem with the overabundance of control options is that if you compromise for all of them, there's a good chance that none of them are going to be very good. Mm. I don't think that Skyward Sword would play very well with a controller. I know that some people who hate motion controls for one reason or another argued, well, you could do the motions with the second stick, you know, and I guess technically you could, but...
Hack away.
Yeah.
I don't think that would be good. I think stylus controls are probably out of the question because the game really does have to be designed around that. But if you wanted to put in like Twilight Princess waggle controls, they could certainly go with that. I don't know that people would really want to do that. Maybe for using the hook shot and the bow and arrow and stuff, you know, having the pointer, people might want that. So if you could customize it, maybe turn certain parts of it on, certain parts of it off, I could see that being really nice as a new option that they could add in there. But I think, you know, the primary way to play it will be just with joysticks and buttons, and that's how most people will want to play it. But I hadn't thought about it before we got this email, and I thought, well, that's kind of a cool idea. You know, they're not going to put in motion plus sword swinging, because Wind Waker, that's not part of the engine, and it certainly is not part of the way the game's balanced, you know? And
right. Like, you would not only have to redo the controls, but you would have to put in new enemies as well, because they're just not designed to cope with the fact that you can...
With the fact that you're hitting them from, like, crazy-ass bonkers directions.
Yeah. Like, new animations and new routines. Like, they would have to be able to block your attacks. They would have to... They're just not prepared for your sword swinging.
Look at Pikmin and Pikmin 2 and the way they were ported to Wii. You know, they really did a lot to change the way that game controls, and it did rebalance the game a little bit, because now you can, you know, throw Pikmin a lot farther away from Olimar because the pointer can be anywhere on the screen. It's not a fixed distance. So in terms of pointer control, which is a small part of the game, but I could see that being implemented. Definitely.
I mean, what I want out of this Wind Waker port is I want it to not look like the little plastic Duplo figurines they look like right now in the screenshots we got. I want them to look like the cel-shaded GameCube game, but higher res and maybe more textures. But not textures, because that wouldn't fit with the, you know, the game, but more art, essentially. And I want the game to play like the game I already had. Maybe put the Tingle Tuner right on the gamepad.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I could do both at the same time. But, I mean, besides that, leave it alone. I don't need anything else.
Yeah.
This is a remake of a game that's already really an amazing game.
Yeah, it's a classic. Mm. You don't really mess too much with a classic, I agree.
No.
Well, actually, my girlfriend started the game a while ago, but she didn't really get too far into it. And I had to help her out with a Forsaken Fortress right away. So I definitely think that there are some parts that they could smooth over. Like, the Forsaken Fortress is a bitch, and I had trouble, and I've played that game like two times before.
Oh, you're just not stealthy.
Well, maybe, but I mean, like, you have to do precise jumping to catch ropes, to swing from them. Like, I don't know, like, the, it's very complex and it's very, it demands too much precision for, like, you don't have the space in that fortress to move the camera exactly right. And, I don't know. I think that they could definitely make it a little bit friendlier.
I kind of question whether they're going to go to that length to mess with it, because then they would piss off a lot of people too. I could see them adding super guide and stuff like
right.
that.
Right, I mean, they'd piss me off. That'd I love cool. that part of the game. There's a pretty amusing kind of Metal Gear reference in there where he jumps in the barrel and it's like, oh, no one will see him anymore. I mean, there's stuff in that particular stage I think is really awesome that some people dislike, and I mean.
Well, I'm not saying get rid of the Forsaken Fortress completely. It's kind of part of the story, but
I'm saying make it longer.
Oh,
yeah!
Damn it!
There you go.
I'm
Fuck
saying
you.
Neither. I'm saying leave it alone.
I mean, to me though, it's tricky to make changes to games like that because it is. I think the people who are more likely to buy the game are the ones who would be more upset if you made changes like that. So, I mean, to me, I just want a prettier version of a game I already love. If you want to add some of the dungeons that got cut for development time, do it. Great. Awesome. That's wonderful. Besides that, just don't do anything. I mean, if you want to add extra content, do whatever. But I don't need Waggle. I don't need to draw on the touchscreen. I don't need whatever. I don't need motion controls. I just want to play this game again.
Well, stick your game in the Wii and play it again then.
I want it to be prettier. That's my point.
James, let me blow your mind. What if instead of motion control or, you know, Tingle Tuner, all this other stuff that Nintendo could modify with this, what if Wind Waker HD is the game Miyamoto's kind of teasing is going to be finally the debut of the near-field communication? I mean, it's got all these great characters.
I would set everything on fire in the world.
It would be completely optional. It would be a bonus feature. But Wind Waker has all these really cute characters that people like. And I think, you know, basically little figurines of all these characters from the game could be something that Nintendo would be very easy for them to market that. And if you place that on the gamepad and it did something in the game that was, you know, useful or interesting, or they put in a new mode, you know, maybe they put in some kind of online multiplayer mode like Spirit Tracks and Phantom Hourglass had, and you could play as the character from the toy. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things they could do with it, but I could see with the kind of characters that they have in that game that this might be a good way to experiment with it. And it'd be another thing that would get collectors interested, too.
I have always thought that Wind Waker would be improved if you could play as Pikachu. Think about it.
Terrible.
I would be beside myself.
Maybe Pichu.
I just think in general, like, I haven't really bought HD ports or remakes of games that I've already played. And I find that, you know, like, when they do remake old games, like Chrono Trigger, for instance, for the DS, like, when they actually add new content, usually it's really not good content. Like,
yeah.
Most of the time, it's not the same team that made the original game that are doing the remake, so they kind of... Sometimes they just don't get it, or, you know, they don't have the same amount of talent, or they certainly don't have the same budget. In this case, Nintendo probably still has, like, the whole team that made Wind Waker, who could potentially remake it, although...
But we don't know that they're the ones working on this remake.
Yeah, no idea.
I hope they're working on a new Zelda game, and they're letting someone else do the HD remake.
Yeah.
Well, but they're still monitoring it. I mean...
Oh, yeah.
I don't have any concern. Anything they add, they're going to have designed themselves, so I'm not too worried about it. I mean, there was stuff that just didn't get into to Wind Waker because of time. Mm-hmm. So, like, whole sections. So that stuff's already on paper. They could just implement.
Yeah, which is easier said than done, but it's a good point. I mean, to some extent, that content that was cut out has been designed. It may not have been play tested. It may not have been tweaked, but you know, that's not as tall of an order. So if they do end up adding some of that stuff back in, I do have some confidence that it's going to be of a similar level of quality as the rest of the game.
How likely is it that they never really did anything with that content that they had planned though? I mean, usually when they can't do something in one game, they just put in the sequel. And we've had like a couple of Zelda games since then, so...
Yeah, especially with this franchise.
It's a good point. We really don't know for sure.
But what game would have fit the theme? So a lot of the dungeons in that game are cast around you and another character. Mm-hmm. There's not really a Zelda game since then that has that parallel.
It may not have been brought over that directly.
I don't know. Like, you've only got two, the two last dungeons that have you being followed around by a character. No?
No.
Oh, okay.
All three of the three major dungeons have you with various representatives of the races.
Hmm. It's been a while.
They may have used some of the content, but I don't know what they would have used it in because it's so different from a lot of the other Zelda games. I know people go like, they're all the same. But that game does have a different feel to it. There's lots of things like picking up the items that enemies drop and using them to solve puzzles and things like that that haven't shown up again.
You know, people are going to say this is blasphemy, but I would absolutely love if they enlarged the old Hyrule that you can, gave you more space to explore under the ocean, because that is such a tease, and it's a really good tease, and I respect and appreciate it very much. But that invisible wall that keeps you away from going out into old Hyrule and exploring it, I wanted to break through that wall more than anything.
Yeah, I can't think of one person who does not want that, actually.
Well, so here's the thing. I wanted that so badly, but at the same time, I don't know they could keep the illusion up.
I know.
Like, I think they have to cut it off, otherwise the illusion falls apart.
There are glitches that people have exploited to actually get around and walk up there, like get off the path that you're supposed to take. But basically, you can't really do anything, of course, and it does break the illusion. So they would have to seriously rework. They would definitely have to create more content there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's prime real estate to do that. If you want to add more stuff to that game, that's where I would do it. Especially if you can leave it in black and white, that'd be amazing.
See, I think what they could do to sort of enhance that experience, maybe it's not you get to go around and explore this frozen world, because I think it being off in the distance sort of helps with the imagery, but maybe give you a better view of it.
Well, it'll be in HD. So
I mean, because really, you just see the town beyond the trees. Maybe let you see it from the castle, where you can actually look out into the world and see at distance. You'll be able to see, the Mount whatever they call their Mount Doom. I can't remember what it's called now. You can see the mountains out in the horizon. You could see the sort of the terrain of Ocarina of Time.
That'd be really cool. But it would all be in the style of Wind Waker.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you wouldn't have to break the illusion by letting you explore it. You'd just be seeing stuff out in the distance.
Yeah.
And then you get close, and it's a matte painting. And you're like, fuck.
Of course
it
is.
They don't let you get close. That's the trick.
Right,
I know.
Very true. Okay, so John is going to read the last email this week.
All right. John writes, with the PS4 launching this Christmas, do you think it could actually help the Wii U? When the Wii was competing with the PS3 and 360 during their first few holidays, we saw a lot of parents buying Wiis simply because, out of all those new systems, it was the cheapest. Do you think that will happen this year with the Wii U and PS4? Could the PS4 be the best thing that ever happened to the Wii U? Also, what about a price drop? P.S. I wrote this email on my Wii U. Power to Nintendo. P.P.S. If this email makes it in the show and you continue reading at this point, you might as well mention a struggling little Nintendo news group I'm part of called 8 Worlds News. That's at youtube.com/8worldsnews.
PS4 and Wii U. I think there is something to be said for having two new consoles on the market competing for the really high dollar, big spender, hardcore people who want the early adopters who want the newest stuff on the market. Most other people, the vast majority of people who are going to buy a console this Christmas are not looking to spend $500.
Yeah.
And having the Wii U there, which will cost less than the other systems, a good bit less, although I don't think a price drop is coming, but probably a bundle, probably you can buy the system with something other than Nintendo Land, something a little more exciting, packed in with the system. Mm-hmm. That could happen. But yeah, I think there is that. But I think this effect, whatever boost Nintendo will get from this price disparity at Christmas time, is going to be hidden by the fact that Nintendo better have really good games on the market, and Nintendo is going to come out and say, well, the reason the system is selling is because people really want to play the new 3D Mario or the Zelda, the Wind Waker HD remake, or whatever else they're going to announce at
E3
that's coming out this year. So that is going to be hopefully the driving force behind any kind of boost that they get. And I don't know how big of a boost it'll be, but it'll be a boost. It'll definitely do better than last year.
Yeah.
But it'll be hard to tell exactly what all the different reasons for that
will be. I don't think that there'll be a lot of people out there that will be choosing between the PS4 and the Wii U, right? I think it'll be kind of one of those things like we saw last time where people will have an Xbox 360 and a Wii or a PS3 and a Wii. I mean, I think people will be looking at it as something perhaps that will complement a PS4.
But it takes longer to get to the point where people own multiple new consoles.
True.
That doesn't happen at launch time. It takes a while, and that part of that is price drops, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't buy a PS3 until years later because I waited for the price drop and the remodel. That was huge for me.
I mean, to me, what the value proposition here is on an individual console basis. So I think if you don't own any of the new consoles, you're not doing comparison shopping so much as you are saying, well, this is this much. Do I really want it that much? This is this much. Do I really want that much? The only real comparison is if Microsoft comes out and shows the next Xbox, which they probably will. I mean, we have every indication they intend to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then you may see some level of comparison between a 360 or a 360 replacement and a PS3 replacement.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of what you're going to find is it's going to be dictated more by the price than anything else. And to be honest, the numbers we saw bounced around before Sony did their announcement, we don't know how valid they are, but they're stupid. And and honestly, after the Vita, and we had the conversation earlier today, I fully expect the price to be stupid.
See, I don't. And I don't because...
Really?
Yeah, I don't because...
Then why haven't they price dropped the Vita yet?
The Vita's price is stupid because the Vita is pretty much all proprietary stuff in there.
Okay.
I don't think that the PS3's price... I think the PS3 is probably going to be about $400, which is still high, but I don't think it's going to be $500, $600, $700. The reason why that happened in the first place was because they had to stuff a Blu-ray drive in there, which at the time was brand new, cost a shit ton to make.
They couldn't even make them. They had a failure rate in building
the
stupid
things. Yeah,
it cost
a ton to make those, and that's why. And the thing is, they did that because they wanted to push Blu-ray. That's out of the way.
Oh, and the Cell processor.
Blu-ray has won, and also Cell. Yes, Cell cost an absolute fuck ton to make.
It was the stupidest.
It was totally stupid idea, but pretty much everything in there was Sony proprietary stuff that was pretty cutting edge at the time, if not brand new to the market. So that's why that thing cost $600 at launch.
Yeah.
So your argument is that the Vita is that expensive because it's full proprietary stuff. What methodology do we have to prove that they've learned any lessons?
Well, it's basically a PC with a Blu-ray drive.
Yeah, I mean, from what we do know about the components in PS4, also. I know people like to think backwards compatibility is easy and cheap, but you think about all the processors and all the firmware and the controller ports and accessory ports and all that other stuff that goes into making a system backwards compatible. They don't have to do any of that stuff on PS4.
Yeah.
Because they just decided not to.
I mean,
done.
The PS3s, I mean, let me put it this way. When PS2 first launched, it had a PS1 inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it played all PS1 games. When the PS3 launched, the $600 ones that were backwards compatible with PS2 had the Emotion Engine PS2 processor inside of it. That's why they were able to play all those games. That's why it was so expensive.
Yeah.
It was a big part of it. So not dealing with backwards compatibility, even though you will piss off some people, and it'll make the library very narrow for a while after that system comes out, it will help them keep costs down. It's a really significant factor. And if you don't think I'm overblowing this, look at the new version of Wii that Nintendo put out a couple years ago that doesn't have GameCube backwards compatibility. That's because that stuff costs money to make. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not making very many of them anymore, and there's not that much demand for it. So if they can save $20 on the manufacturing of every single system by leaving out GameCube ports that nobody wants anymore, they're going to do it. And that's why they did it. That stuff costs money, you know, so that's part of it too. But yeah, I think 400 is a pretty safe bet. You know, maybe a couple of different flavors with, you know, kind of like Wii U had, you know, a couple different tiers.
Yeah.
But that seems reasonable to me. But I mean, I don't think Wii U even with all this effect, even with being, you know, the most mature new console on the market this Christmas, I don't think Wii U is going to be the the sales leader, I think that probably either goes to 3DS or Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably.
With all this other new shit on the market, I think those are, because those are the most competitively priced and those are the most established ones. Those are the ones with all the name recognition.
Yeah.
And they're going to have the best deals.
Yeah, and people snickered back when the 360 was launched because the PS2 was outselling it and all that stuff, you know. But that happens basically every generation. You know, yeah, people are still picking up the old system. To most people, it's old. But to a lot of people, it's like, oh, finally, this is $129 or $99. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now I can pick it up.
And a 360 still costs $200.
Yep.
Yeah. So there's still room for them to do a price drop on 360. Mm-hmm. You know, I think 3DS is already has a really good price. I don't think they're going to change the price on 3DS, but, you know, there's going to be a new Pokemon game coming out in the fall.
Exactly.
And that's not the only thing coming out. So there's going to be, the software demand is going to be huge on 3DS. And that platform is becoming so mature that it's not ubiquitous, but there are enough of them out there that people see them and then they go want one. And it's becoming a very mainstream system at this point. So it's going to do really well.
Yeah, it's hitting the 30 million mark. So
yeah. 3DS is going to do well.
The Wii U will have been launched a year ago then. So it's not exactly the same situation as new hardware releasing. But at least now, like, what's going to happen that's different in November this year is that they're going to release games.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Exactly.
So we are told.
One will hope.
Yeah, that's going to be huge. And that's why I think Wii U will do better than it did last year.
And I do think that a way that the PS4 will benefit the Wii U is that developers have been making game for the PS4, and they are going to be... I think there's going to be a lot of ports, at least initially. Like, I think that the Wii U will get many multi-platform releases. You know, like, we've already got Watch Dogs and stuff like that.
Maybe Destiny.
That shit is also getting released on 360 and PS3, but mm-hmm. I do think that developers are probably, you know, like, Ubisoft talks a big game, says that they want, you know, more console releases so they can release more IPs and stuff like that. But I do think that most publishers are kind of scared.
Fuck you, Ubisoft.
I think that most publishers are kind of scared shitless of next generation, and they're going to be edging their bets like crazy. And they're going to want to release on absolutely everything. I mean, if it turned out to be false, apparently, but if EA fails, you know, by selling millions and millions of copies of Dead Space 3, imagine just how reticent they must be to actually release new games on hardware that's not launched yet. And that's not going to have a big install base for years to come.
Yeah,
It's well, a hardware that costs more to develop for.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
That's the biggest issue.
Like, consoles are just in a really weird spot right now where I don't think that, at least I'm not totally convinced that the market is dying for new consoles. Publishers want them, but I don't know if I don't know if most gaming fans want new consoles. I don't know about that.
It's a weird place, and I think publishers do want them for the point Guillaume was making just now, mm-hmm. that it's a good time that you can launch new IPs and you can shit out half quality games and still sell okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be soft.
Because you can. I mean, let's be honest, you can do that. But I think at the same time, they like want to have a new console launch and then immediately go back to developing on the PS3 and 360.
Yeah.
Because the costs associated with making these games is going to be so immense. I mean, we saw that Square Enix trailer during the Sony event. My tweet was, Square Enix introduces the first $1 billion game. Because, I mean, the amount of money they'd have to spend to make a game actually look like that, which I don't think any game they make will, is going to be the equivalent of making a full-featured CG film.
Which they've also done.
I mean, it looks like a film.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's very telling that Ubisoft's biggest game for this holiday season is going to be Assassin's Creed 4, which is going to come out on all the new consoles and all the old consoles.
Yeah.
And that is the story of this holiday season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, I think what you're seeing now is more and more of a divide where risky game concepts are with indie devs. Mm-hmm. And basically, more and more, the big publishers are just going with the tried and true franchises, sequels, annualized stuff more and more now, more than ever before. You're just seeing a lot of games that are supposedly experimental, languishing for years. Last Guardian.
Oh my God.
You know, stuff like that, where just those kinds of games, and you know, that's the kind of game where that game comes out. How's it going to sell?
It's not going to make up its production costs.
That's exactly it, right?
I mean, less Guardians on the cameo elements of power development track.
I mean, and that's the thing. But, you know, if you put out Madden, if you put out Black Ops 3, you know those games are going to sell a lot. You know that. But you know you're going to pay a lot to make them.
The indies are really an interesting situation because, like, you've got a lot of them going to Steam, but Steam also, like, has gotten so many games to publish that they've installed barriers.
It's a crowded marketplace on Steam.
Yeah,
and it's really hard to get noticed on Steam because there's so much stuff.
Wii U hasn't really released anything that wasn't by developers that have already drunk the Nintendo Kool-Aid.
Yeah,
like you know, like Frozen Byte, I guess, with Trine 2 is really the only developer I can think of that had never made anything for Nintendo consoles before.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think to a certain extent that maybe because those people were when Nintendo was looking for partners, they were the ones willing to take that risk.
Yeah.
I think it's that next generation that they need to re-engage with.
Right, but what I wanted to get at is that Nintendo has drastically lowered the barriers for indie developers, you know, going from WiiWare to eShop. They used to require office space, you know, like you couldn't be a garage developer. You couldn't develop from your home.
They've
dropped that requirement. They had some really weird, a really weird situation where if your game didn't sell enough, you didn't make a dime, Nintendo would keep all the proceeds.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they've dropped that as well for the Wii U. But still, you don't see the indies.
Hey, not to mention the file size limits on WiiWare.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
That's 40 megs.
It's hard out there for a WiiWare developer.
It is. Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's if you look at just how many WiiWare games there are, it's very encouraging for Wii U because WiiWare is a bad platform with some shockingly great games on it.
Mm-hmm.
As a platform, it was a mess. I mean, I'm talking all the back end stuff. The way Nintendo handled it was really a mess, and yet there were tons of games released on WiiWare and really, much more than people give it credit for, a lot of really great games on
WiiWare. Oh yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
And you look at Wii U is a much better situation for people. I think it's a matter of time before, you know, and I know Steam is much more of a thing now. You know, 5-6 years ago, Steam really wasn't a factor when WiiWare first launched. But I think a lot of games will come out on Steam and Wii U and PSN or whatever. But I do think there will be lots of really great eShop games on Wii U.
Yeah,
and there are already some really great ones, and we don't know about a whole lot of them that are coming out still, you know? I mean, a lot of the ones that we've heard about have come out now, or they're very close, like Tokitori 2, like Cloudberry Kingdom.
Right.
But I think at E3 you're going to hear a lot more about that stuff.
I hope so, because I feel like Nintendo really has an uphill battle to fight with indie developers, because right now, actually, there's Double Fine now, in addition to Frozen Byte, who are first publishing on the Wii U, on a Nintendo console for the first time. But all the rest, like, are all developers who have known success on WiiWare somehow.
Well, yeah, but it makes sense that those are the ones who are there.
Yeah, but I'm just, like, it's just weird that it's only them right now who are occupying that space. Like, it looks like everyone else is just turned off from developing for Nintendo consoles.
Well, the nice thing is they haven't ghettoized eShop exclusive games anymore. They're listed. I mean, they have their own category. You can filter for them when you go to the store.
Mm-hmm.
But, you can get sexy with them.
But they're at least in the same store. And, you can put them on sale. You can permanently reduce the price. You can, you know, do things to move them up to the front. And I think it's just a much better situation now. So I think that stuff's going to be a big factor. Not necessarily for the holiday season. That's more of an all year round thing. But, I'm excited about the future of the eShop. I really am.
I would actually argue that the eShop games, the holiday season is probably the worst time for
them. Everybody's spending their money on big expensive things at stores.
They're getting drowned out in the media Thunderdome that is the new Batman game, the new Call of Duty game, the new whatever.
That just makes it even more inexplicable that Nintendo of America held on to Fluidity
until like December 27th.
Yeah.
Because they saw what I saw about fluidity.
Oh, boo. Please. Oh. Please.
James. Harsh.
Go back to the bridge that you crawled out of or something.
I crawled out of the bridge.
From beneath of. I don't know.
How are bridges built in Canada, Guillaume? How are bridges built in Canada?
Monumentously.
Really? That's what you're going to go with? That's what you're going to fucking go with.
Now I'm going to the bridge.
That was pretty good. I'm going to edit everything anyway.
Oh my god, that was terrible.
You were terrible.
That was really bad.
I
don't know if I should just feel sympathy or if I should just let it go and let that fester for a while.
We are going to have to wrap up listener mail. So thanks everyone who wrote in, including those of you who we haven't gotten to yet. And you can always send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And thank you to everybody who does so. Next up, I wanted to mention that there's a new episode of Radio Trivia podcast edition with TYP and myself. I didn't mention it last week because I didn't know when it was going to get finished. It actually was posted like an hour after we recorded. I felt really bad I didn't have a plug for it. So I want to tell people now in case you haven't heard it yet. And of course, you can find it at our website. You can search on iTunes for Radio Trivia. It's a fantastic podcast full of wonderful video game music and fun discussions. And if you haven't heard it yet, I'll tease you a little bit. One of the games we talk about on that show is Final Fantasy V Advance, which has wonderful music by Nobu Uematsu, the famous Final Fantasy composer.
The music is really, really good. It's really one of the best episodes.
I think so, too. I think it's one of the best that I've ever done with TYP. So I always recommend people check that out. On my music podcast, Discover Music Project, I just did a show on Radiohead. You definitely need to check that out. You can find that over at crosstalk.com or just search on iTunes for Discover Music Project. And finally, before we go, I wanted to mention we're having a little bit of a lineup change at PAX East. It's kind of a late-breaking thing. John Lindemann, unfortunately, will not be with us, although it's for a very good reason.
Yes.
He got a new job, and he's moving.
Because I will be breaking him late in the day.
John got a new job, and he'll be moving that weekend, and so he's not going to be able to participate in PAX East, unfortunately. But we have a great substitute, Nate Andrews, who you, I'm sure, remember from back in the fall. He was a substitute multiple times back when John couldn't be on the show for a while. Nate's going to do a fantastic job. Really looking forward to having him there, and well, be our first time meeting him, actually, in person. But he's going to be great, and of course, we've still got the wonderful Chris Kohler on the panel. So we're going to have a really good time. We're kind of in the detailed planning stages of what's going to be happening at the panel, and I'm very excited for that. So in a couple of weeks, you'll be hearing us. You'll either in person at the expo, or you'll hear the recording of the live event.
Johnny, my plan is to coach Nate by phone. I'm going to coach him.
Oh, good.
So he can be as good a stand-in as possible. You know.
So he's going to be drunk, is what you're telling me.
Probably. Probably.
John, maybe you can call in like Charlie from Charlie's Angels.
Perfect.
Maybe not. So that's it for this week's episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you next time with Ease Book 1 on Radio Free Nintendo.
I thought he meant like an actual like old listserv style news group. I'm like, what the f- what?
Usenet. Yeah.
Find us on Usenet.
I was like, do our readers even know what a listserv is?
Some of our listeners are older than we are, James.
Not older than John.
No,
well, maybe not.
No one is.
I wonder how many are older than me. Because right now I am 38 years 9 months old as of this recording.
John, by the way, for those of you listening at home, John has over a decade on me.
Yes.
He was almost 12 when I was born.
Yeah.